Good evening. We are live. I'm Lauren the Insider, and you are watching the Sean Atwood channel. Tonight, I am joined by the hottest name in town, Andrew Loney, who has written the most incredible book, Lifting the Lid, on the corruption and the awful, awful things that Sarah and Andrew have been up to. And they have tried to hide it from you, the public. They have tried to silence Andrew himself. But that's not happening, Andrew, because you are here to tell us exactly what's going on. Welcome.
Well, thank goodness. Well, very nice to join you. Well, I think the thank goodness there is social media and there are people like you that give us a slightly alternative pluralistic press, because as you say, sometimes the mainstream press don't want to cover these stories. You know, I think it's a very exciting development that there are all these new channels, podcasts particularly, that are beginning to allow people like me to get our sides of the story out.
When you started, it was 4 years in the making, the book. When you started it, did you think you would uncover what you've uncovered?
No, I was constantly surprised by what I found, constantly shocked, and sometimes found it hard to believe some of the stuff. But actually, as I've gone on, more and more things have been sort of backed up by fresh testimony. So, for example, one of the controversial things I discovered was that Andrew had probably lost his virginity at the age of 8. He'd been taken off to a brothel at the age of 11. And this seemed to me incredible stuff. And then actually, funny enough, this afternoon, I was talking to someone who said, well, actually, that's pretty standard. People get taken off in Mexico to brothels at that age. People get married in Mexico at the age of 11. They have often 6 children, these couples, by the time they're 18. So I began to think, well, maybe this isn't such a bizarre thing. You know, you talk to people, for example, who are at school with Andrew, and then you discover that, you know, he was clearly much more physically developed than other children. There were strange things going on in his prep school. And so this begins to become true. So sometimes things, and in some ways it's a good idea to kind of put everything in, because you're never quite sure what will then, you know, be backed up. And if things clearly, everything that goes in is backed up. It's backed up with double sources. But some of these stories just seem so weird. I was reluctant to put them in.
How much did the Queen know?
Well, the Queen, I think, knew a lot. I mean, there were about two things, about Epstein and about the way he was operating as special trade envoy. You know, people on the second would go and complain. You know, the heads of the Foreign Office, in fact, intelligence officers, went and complained to private secretaries, and nothing happened. In fact, they were told to get lost, that nothing would happen. People are saying that she actually colluded with Andrew, particularly with his dealings with the presidents of Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan. And she was very happy to accept gifts from, there's a famous picture of her accepting a horse from the president of Azerbaijan. In terms of Epstein, again, every time some scandal arose, she would, rather than distance herself from him, you know, she would make a point of going to church with him, get him to escort her up the aisle of the church service, give him a new honor. People began to question whether, you know, there was perhaps nothing in these stories, because the Queen, they thought, would know and she wouldn't identify herself with him. But I think the fact is, you know, she basically got into bed with him, was prepared to support him, no matter what. And she put the monarchy actually second to the interests of her own family, which I think people find shocking. People don't like these messages. They blame the messenger, but it's the reality.
Also, going through your book, well, I had the audio version, which is incredible, but it's just staggering to me that, and the way you've aggregated the information is truly just brilliant. But the Access for Cash scandal involving Sarah Ferguson, I mean, how that wasn't enough to get her off royal grounds, out of sight, with a one-way ticket as far away as possible, it blows my mind, because yep, that is, it's almost like the palace have just washed it all away, used all their friends in mainstream media to rewrite the narrative. And that is unbelievable what happened. I mean, can you go over your findings with things like that?
Well, because this is the famous the famous 2010 episode where she was caught in a sting operation by the News World selling access to Andrew for £500,000, all filmed. And I think what people forget is that this wasn't the first episode. This was the reason that the News of the World mounted the sting, because they'd heard of her doing this, particularly in promising access in Kazakhstan and Abu Dhabi and places. But you're absolutely right. I mean, she was caught bang to rights. They filmed it. I mean, it is a very shocking piece of film, which you can still see on YouTube. And you're right. They should have just cut their links. But and Prince Philip had got the measure of her. But I think the problem was that, you know, she kind of went on Oprah. She apologized. She'd made terrible mistakes. She was in debt. She had a terrible childhood. And everyone sort of forgot about it. I think the royal family probably did remember it, but they kind of hoped that people would forget, as they did. And then she's wormed her way back into the royal family over the years. Most people have forgotten these episodes, but there have been lots of these episodes. There's another one with a court case with a man called Selman Turk in 2022, where £1.1 million was paid to the Yorks, which they refused to explain where it came from. It seems to be money that was being laundered, and also money for clearly promoting something that they didn't really want people to know about. And nothing again was done. The press actually hardly reported the story. They did some sort of deal with some of the people involved in the court case, and so it was shut down as a story. And it wasn't just Sarah and Andrew. It was actually the daughter where money was being paid. There's a case of Gate Ventures, another court case, where Sarah was receiving £270,000 a year as a consultancy, but couldn't explain actually what she did for it. But, you know, their trick is never to respond. And eventually people give up asking questions and kind of forget about it. But you're right, when you see everything put together, it really is a shocking picture for both of them. And I'm picking up more and more information literally on a daily basis from people coming forward with other stories, feeling that there was nowhere to go to tell these stories until now. I think probably shocked by what has come out. I think that's the reason a lot of people talk to me. I mean, senior diplomats and naval officers and others, I think, were just fed up covering for Andrew. You know, he was useless in the Navy. He's been useless, frankly, all his life. He's sponged off people, taken advantage of his position, and he's known he's been protected. And Sarah's been exactly the same. I mean, it's ridiculous that she should still be calling her Duchess, herself Duchess of York, and being able to monetize this with products. And that even last week at the Duchess of Kent's funeral, they were being given a police escort to drive them up from Windsor to this private event when they're no longer working royals.
And also, you say about monetizing. My favorite part in your book was that when she'd gone on the weight loss, and it reminded me of Katie Price. I spent 4 years looking after the PR for Katie Price, and people in America might not know, but she's kind of former glamour model. And her and Sarah Ferguson, there are so many similarities between their careers. It's the traumatize and monetize, push-pull, which I found so surprising, actually, because how Sarah has monetized her position, it's grotesque. You know, it's trading on early years trauma, and then it's trading on weight loss, mental health. It's gutter, really, when you think about it. Well, it's very tabloid fodder.
But I mean, she's such a hypocrite. I mean, she'll go in on do TV programs telling people how to not spend money and eat a healthy diet. And yet she's extraordinarily extravagant, wasting money all over the place. Will, you know, have three joints of meat prepared every night and then just eat some kettle chips. And then on the back of that, she'll try and sell some deal to, you know, on healthy food to a supermarket. Or she'll do a charity event, and yet people are banned from taking pictures at the charity event, and she sells an exclusive to Hello, who pay her a huge sum for the photos and the interview. So everything is transactional. Everything has a purpose. And you begin to question, she describes herself as this great humanitarian, but you begin to wonder if she's just using charity as a vehicle for her own social ambitions and social climbing and her financial sort of maneuverings.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. I mean, the charities, there's always a camera and there's always a, you know, Sarah always comes out of the charity work better. I don't imagine she's going to a hospice to see people that are dying, you know, away from the cameras. I think it's very much, let's wheel out a sick child, or, oh, there are some black orphans. This will make a lovely photo. And it's disgusting. You know, it's...
She certainly did that with her own kids. I mean, she pretended to be this great mother, but actually she was never there at the children's schools all the way through the careers, even when she was no longer traveling to America. And yet, you know, all the photo opportunities are her as this doting mother with her kids in her arm. And then the nannies would say, you know, she just passes them back to us once the camera's switched off. And there's an awful lot of stuff done just purely for the cameras. So, you know, we saw this with the email to Epstein this week, and there's just extraordinary hypocrisy and cynicism about the way she operates.
Do you think she has manipulated her mental health and kind of leveraged it over her children to kind of like wheel them out? Because, you know, when you see them in public, it's, I think when one of them announced the one of their children being born, she was in one of the pictures. And I thought, why are you in the picture? You know, and you see them laughing and joking on the red carpet, but it seems... very forced. Do you think she, you know, cries?
Well, she loses everything in her life. So, you know, when she has a cancer scare, you know, she's got her upstage Catherine, who's also had a scare. And, you know, one wonders if it's, you know, clearly as serious as she says, rather cynically. But then she tries to monetize it. She gets involved with a charity, but then she's involved with some sort of business proposition around wellness of some sort. You know, she'll go out and promote it, but she won't make clear that she has a financial incentive to do so, because she's basically a partner in this operation. And that's a problem. Everything is a business opportunity, and you begin to question whether how much of this stuff is done on a sort of basis of a humanitarian, how much is done just to promote and to make some money.
Did you find through your research, you know, within her inner circle, is there anyone that seems like a decent person that comes from a kind of a normal background? Because when I've researched into her, it's all her friends are in the Epstein Black Book. And yes, it doesn't mean they're guilty of anything, but I've emailed them and none of them have replied. So I've got questions.
Yes. I mean, clearly, a lot of people in the Black Book are also in a social circle. A lot of them are pretty dodgy people. You know, the number of people who've, you know, then been charged with sexual conviction, sexual crimes, for example, I mean, P. Diddy and others. She went and stayed or went and visited Peter Nygaard in the Bahamas. I mean, all these people that you really shouldn't be sort of putting your children with, she seems to sort of mix with because they're rich and they seem interested in her. So there are big questions about the people she mixes with. I mean, there are one or two very decent people. I mean, she had a PR woman called Kate Waddington, who stood by her, wasn't paid always. I'm just his godmother to one of her children. And clearly, they're very good friends. But from my experience of meeting Kate Waddington, she doesn't seem the sort of person who would normally be mixing with the sort of crowd that Fergie does. But, you know, who knows? I mean, there is a lot of loyalty to Fergie. I mean, she's and she shows a lot of loyalty to other people. But, I mean, for most of us, the people who congregate around both of them are people that we would run a mile from. But kind of Andrew and Sarah seem to actually run towards them.
It's funny as well, because with Sarah Ferguson, she knew and has always known the power she holds of being, you know, within the royal circle, and how people in, you know, the Commonwealth countries and England, America, that we are fascinated with the royals. Everyone's got an opinion on them. And I met her at a former friend's wedding. And I thought she was so unbelievably fake. It was in the toilets and I was with someone who was an A/B lister. And, you know, it was all darling, darling. And I just thought, you don't even know me. And I just thought, I've seen your kind before. Do you know what I mean? You're kind of looking who you can grab, what you can get from people.
Yes, she's not fake. A genuine person.
But, you know, she knows the power that being a kind of a royal has, and she has rinsed the lemon. And I mean, I think, Andrew, the monarchy has never been in such a delicate position as now. And obviously it's not just down to Sarah and Andrew, but do you think the swamp can be drained of all the corruption you found, or do you think we're in serious trouble?
Well, I mean, there are lots of questions about King Charles and cash for honours and plastic bags of money. So, I mean, you know, which the press don't want to touch. And, you know, there are other members of the royal families. Zara and Peter Phillips have clearly been caught monetizing their royal position. There are lots and lots of pictures of Beatrice and Eugenie, for example, with the businessman Johnny Hon supporting his business ventures. We've got Beatrice supporting Saudi banks. So there's quite a lot of this, shall we say, using their royal position to line their own pockets. I think the problem is if you pull the string, the whole thing begins to unravel. And so the strategy is basically to try and hold the fort and hope that, you know, people will go away. But you're absolutely right. I think views are changing. People are much more concerned about it. I mean, they only depend for their survival, really, on commanding respect and trust. And a lot of that is going. And I think Charles has been very foolish not to take a much firmer hand with, particularly with Andrew and Sarah, but also with Meghan and Harry. He seems to be weak, you know, saying that, you know, Sarah and Andrew can't come for Christmas is pathetic given some of the things we're seeing. And, you know, people have been calling for investigations into their links with Epstein, asking them to give to present themselves as material witnesses to the authorities, to the lawyers. National Crime Agency has been approached by MPs for years to investigate, and yet nothing ever happens. The Met Police go through the motions and say nothing to see here. And I think, you know, this is shaking people's faith in institutions. They do feel there's a cover-up, and they do feel there's one rule for the rich and powerful and another for everyone else. And, you know, we're seeing it clearly in the States, and I think we're seeing it in a big way here. I think it's a very worrying sign. I mean, the support for the monarchy has dropped, as you say, to, I won't say an all-time low, but a pretty low figure. And people who previously would have been pretty strong supporters of the monarchy, people perhaps like us, are now questioning it and concerned about its future. So,
do you know, the problem I've got, Andrew, as well, and I did some research into this, is what kind of role does Charles hold when it comes to the Church of England? Because there's been lots of safeguarding issues and there's been some SA reports and things like that. And if you are head of the Church of England, you would think you would do something, would you not? But no, it's ceremonial. You know, you're no king of mine putting on a crown and doing nothing. And I think a lot of people are getting to this point.
To be fair to him, I mean, you know, it is a difficult role balancing, you know, the ability to, shall we say, interfere and to warn and do other things, the budget rules, and not to be seen as too political. Who knows what he may have been doing behind the scenes. But yes, I mean, there are concerns, you know, his support for a series of people, Bishop Bull is another, but Jimmy Savile, all these people, you know, clearly very damaging for their reputation. He's perhaps been loyal too long to some of these people, or is rather naive. And he just needs to have a little bit more ruthlessness. And I think William will have that. And maybe William will have to clear up this mess, because at the moment, there's no sign Charles is doing it.
I mean, Diana was right, wasn't she, all those years ago? He is a weak man, and he's not strong enough to be king.
Yes, I mean, you know, again, you know, it's always difficult to get this balance between the ceremonial and the... I think the Queen was good. I mean, I think she clearly did have quite strong feelings, which she exercised in a very discreet way behind the scenes. You know, he's only been in this position for a few years. Maybe he's still learning the ropes a bit, but, you know, he had a long apprenticeship to work out things, you know, and maybe some of the problems are different. I often wonder whether people who are briefing the media are not always speaking for him. He's not always fully in control of what his advisors are doing. But that's, again, a sign of a weak leader. It's always too little, too late. Always trying to catch up with what's going on, rather than trying to get ahead of the story and kill it, really.
I mean, we say they're not political and they're not meant to be political, but they seem to become very political behind the scenes when someone is being accused within the family of SA and they want to squash something, you know, and they don't, you know, they're paying politicians, you found, didn't you, from your research?
Well, I don't know if they're paying politicians, but there's clearly pressure put on the media to suppress stories. So I think the most well-known is the story of Amy Robach at ABC Television. And ABC Television had an investigation into Andrew and Jeffrey. And the palace basically shut that down by saying, you know, if you run this story, we will no longer let you interview the Prince and Princess of Wales. And there's quite a lot of that sort of pressure. There's a lot of patronage. So a lot of the MPs I wanted to talk to, or ministers, I discovered seem to have government or palace jobs. So, you know, they're quite subtle the way they pull various levers. And of course, we've got this position where there's not meant to be any parliamentary scrutiny of the royals, parliamentary questions. They're not subject to the Freedom of Information Act. Attempts to get a royal register 20 years ago to register their interests, as MPs have to do, didn't really come to anything. And there's this deference, I would say almost obsequiousness towards the royals, that means that, you know, you can't actually do anything when you see things which clearly wrong and clearly not in their own long-term interests. And you would have thought that they would see the reputational damage of people like Andrew and Sarah and addressed it much, much earlier. As you say, in 2010 with Sarah in the Newsnight interview, 2022 with the Salman Turk case, it's always sort of sticking your head in the sand and hope the problem will go away.
Before we go on to Epstein, I just want to revisit what you said about cash in suitcases. Is this reports of cash in suitcases being delivered to King Charles or to Andrew?
Well, actually both. I mean, certainly I've got information about him taking commission in Kazakhstan. It's not in the book, but I'm hoping to get more information for the paperback. And that was reported to the Queen, and they were told, you know, you just forget it. It's not going to go anywhere. There are certainly stories about Charles taking money from people for Dumfries House and for some of his charities. People being promised honours in return for giving contributions to these charities. He's got involved with all sorts of strange people like James Sturt, who was the son-in-law of Bernie Eccleston, and had himself some shall we say, underworld contacts. So, you know, again, naive to involve yourself with people like that who are going to take advantage of you and are using you, playing you. And that's exactly what Andrew did with Epstein. You know, it was, someone described the rattlesnake and the mouse. And Epstein was able to play Andrew. He used Andrew as a useful idiot. He gave him respectability and status, gave him access. And in return, Andrew got some bills paid for Fergie, access to young women, and again, some more useful contacts for his businesses.
And the association with Epstein started before they claim it did, from your research.
Yes, I mean, the line from them is they met in the late 1990s and they parted company in 2010, beginning of 2011. But the fact is, according to Alistair Watson, who was Andrew's private secretary, writing to the Times, not even something he told me, that relationship began in the early 90s, that they saw them on a regular basis. I mean, there was something called the Britannia Suite at the house in New York because they stayed so often. We've got plenty of testimony from Epstein's staff showing them staying, both of them, a lot. And then we have this testimony from Sarah saying that, you know, in 2011, having said she was going to cut off contact with that with Epstein, that in fact he was a dear friend of hers, etc. We've got Andrew writing to him in 2011 saying, let's play a bit more. And I've got testimony from the doorman of a Epstein block of flats where she's staying in 2013. So, you know, you can't take anything they say, I'm afraid, at face value. They've got so used to lying and getting away with it that they don't even tell very good lies now.
And is there, would you say, a PDF problem within the royal family when it comes to, you know, people like Andrew? Because obviously with Epstein, we've seen the what's gone on is very prevalent across everywhere he is. It's, you know, you couldn't hide it. If you were in his house, you knew exactly what was going on by the reports.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think you know, Sarah was staying there. She must have noticed the phallic soaps and the pictures on the wall and stuff. So I think, I talked funny enough to someone very close to her the other night who said, of course she knew and she didn't care. And I can't speak to the rest of the royal family, but certainly Andrew had slept with a lot of people who were underage and teenagers. And again, some of that stuff I'm going to add to the paperback. Again, we had, you know, legal considerations there, but I've now been able to stand some of that stuff up. So, yeah, I mean, you know, he was pretty undiscriminating about who he was involved with.
I thought what was so upsetting as well is when Virginia had ultimately, you know, blown the whistle and whistleblown on everything, and how Andrew and Epstein weaponized their money and power to silence people. And I thought, how dare you? Like, I'm a mother of two girls, and if that was my children and I didn't have money to go up, and I don't, against someone like Epstein and Andrew, justice, forget it, not happening. And I think it's a crime that makes me incandescent with rage, because until we're all safe, none of us are safe. And these one percenters, they're just laughing. You know, they just get a Harbottle and Lewis or a Shillings law firm or whoever it may be, blank check, deal with it. And it has to stop. I wonder if you can tell the viewers about that situation with, the whole...
There's certainly a lot of intimidation, and you're absolutely right. Powerful, rich and powerful people use slaps, strategic law. I can't remember what it stands for, actually, but basically use the legal system to suppress people's talking.
Loopholes.
But yes, of course. I mean, I've had several letters, or my publishers have, from Shillings. Often these are just try-ons. I mean, often you get one letter, you do a response, and you never hear anything more. But attempts to undermine the credibility of the book, for example, so you then can tweet, this wasn't right, it had to be, they had to do a denial. But we've made two corrections to the book, not because the material wasn't actually accurate, but because the publishers couldn't face an extended lawsuit and the cost of that and the hassle. Because, as you say, these people have bottomless pockets, and they will just do it to kind of undermine the book. One was involved with President Trump and material relating to Melania, and he put a lot of pressure. There was $1 billion suit against HarperCollins' sort of parent company, and, you know, understandably, they decided this wasn't a fight worth having. So changes were made. Prince Harry complained about something which actually wasn't defamatory and was true. But again, we made some changes in order just not to be just another of his endless legal fights. But yeah, there's a lot of that stuff. But certainly, you know, the Sarah's lawyer wrote to Collins before the book was published saying, you know, we're watching you, you know, be careful what you put in this book. We're monitoring Andrew Loney's social media. You know, the attempt to intimidate, it's sort of mafia.
Give them a wave, Andrew.
I'd like to say hello to Mr. Paul Tweed. And of course, you know, we were very careful what we put in, and they would be mad to bring a case, because, of course, the amount of material that one has that hasn't been used in the book, which would be deeply discreditable to them, one would, of course, be able to deploy. So, but there's an awful lot of this sort of pretend, really, shouting that, you know, trying to as I say, put people off by pretending the stuff isn't true when it is.
Well, it's just bullying tactics, and ultimately, you know, for many years, you know, by and large, the royals have held the press by the neck and told them what they can and can't write, and now the floodgates are open, and thank goodness for people like you who are diligently researching and meticulously, you know, making sure you've got these things double sourced, and then you can share it with us. I really loved in the book that you wrote how Epstein was kind of lobbying for Andrew to get a paid gig at JP Morgan, and then you've got Andrew lobbying to reduce Epstein's 2008 sweetheart deal. And this deal, this whole thing, this was around underage girls and the R word and SA. It's sickening, Andrew.
Yes, well, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. And certainly JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley deeply involved in this, often entertained at Buckingham Palace, often entertained by Andrew and Sarah, or entertaining them, and involved in a lot of these cases. So when, for example, Andrew went to Epstein in December 2010, the so-called farewell meeting, what people don't realize is that he was going there to try and get some more money for Sarah, but also he was there to pitch something on behalf of Casanova China with Epstein, and something called Aria Petroleum, of which I think either Morgan Stanley or JP Morgan were involved. And there are lots and lots of these figures, you know, like Jess Slaley, coming into the story. Maybe when these court cases carry through and some of the depositions are unsealed, we'll have a clearer sense of their involvement. But there are a lot of these bankers hanging around, you know, involved in projects that Andrew and Epstein are involved in.
And how much money do you think in total, if you had to take an educated guess, how much money do you think Epstein had given Andrew and Sarah?
Well, the sum I've been given is £2 million. And I think that on that trip, it was 150,000. I mean, Epstein didn't deal in small sums. So the idea of £15,000 for Fergie is ludicrous. I think also we don't have a clear idea of whether these were loans or gifts, what exactly Epstein was getting in exchange for this money, and also what this money was being used for, because the stories keep changing. Sometimes it was to pay for Johnny O'Sullivan's tuition. Sometimes it was to pay him back wages. Sometimes it was to pay off Fergie's debts. And the problem is they've never actually, either of them, ever explained any of this behavior where people are raising questions. And that, of course, is suspicious in its own right. If they have nothing to hide, they should be perfectly happy to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, did Sarah and Andrew, I refuse to call him Prince or her the Duchess. I just think, forget it. They're Sarah and Andrew at best. Do you think they knew what Epstein was and being an intelligence asset?
I have no doubt. I mean, certainly Andrew went to the island. He couldn't have been. I mean, that we have testimony of to him at the Palm Beach house with young, nubile, naked girls in the swimming pool, and he's there. So I don't think anyone can have any doubts that they knew what was going on. They would have had to, I mean, you know, he claimed to go to the mansion and there were all these women running around. He thought it was just, you know, not surprising. There are always lots of people where he lives. Epstein made no secret. There were pretty pornographic images on the walls. There were obviously cameras around. I don't think they can plead that.
So would they have known it was a kind of blackmail operation?
Well, this is what I find so extraordinary. Andrew must have realised that things were being filmed. I mean, there must have been Juliet Bryant, one of the victims, you know, went in and saw the control room. Quite a lot of the victims have talked about at least seeing the cameras, beyond, not necessarily going into the control room. But yeah, he must have been aware of it, and he must have realized that it could be used against him. In fact, there are stories that he confronted Epstein and challenged him about whether he was had compromat and was pleading with him not to use it. But, you know, after all, lots of people had compromat on Andrew. I mean, we know the Russians, the Libyans, the Middle East, China. And I think, again, the great mystery is, why hasn't this material been used? Have they somehow been able to exert pressure on Andrew in some way, and therefore that's allowed it not to come out? Or have they not bothered in some ways because there's no point?
And Sarah and Andrew have put our national security at risk, you know, with Epstein in Buckingham Palace and the access that Epstein got as an intelligence asset that was doing what he was doing. This is, I mean, I've been into Buckingham Palace and the security is vast. And then, oh, there we have, you know, America's worst predator strolling in. You know.
Well, sitting on the throne, exactly, and Ghislaine and Kevin Spacey and you name it. I mean, Paul Page and the other policemen have talked about the fact that Andrew, you know, made such a fuss when, for example, prostitutes came to visit him that they weren't allowed to know their names. So, you know, there was this whole succession of outsiders who the palace didn't know. And I think from talking to people who've been to Buckingham Palace and visited Andrew, you can literally, if you're not properly escorted, you can, you know, literally, someone had a story of going up to see Andrew and literally walking past the Queen's bedroom, and they climbed up onto the roof and did various things. And there was nobody about. It was all dark. They'd switch on the lights. And, you know, it is extraordinary that... but, you know, there have been several security breaches. If you think of the fact that when Sarah was getting her toes sucked, the paparazzi were only yards away, and they could easily have shot her or indeed the young princesses. You know, when Andrew was caught with
Melissa. Do you think that was leaked by her?
Well, there's a big mystery about how the paparazzi were so well established. They dug in days before they arrived. The suggestions that Diana had tipped them off, the suggestions of the palace, even John Bryan, you know, we'll never know unless someone comes forward. I did try and interview Daniel Angeli, who was the photographer, and he seemed prepared to talk, and then he decided not to talk. But he would, of course, know. I mean, there were, of course, two photographers, not just Daniel Angeli. But there's also the case of Melissa Lincoln, who Andrew took a fancy to on a flight to Hawaii. He had dinner with her. There was a private detective literally in the bushes next to where they were eating, because the husband suspected her of having an affair with Kevin Costner, and was slightly surprised to find that Andrew was there. But again, that could easily have been an assassin. What were the protection officers doing? We pay huge sums of money. I think Andrew had six protection officers. You know, they travel the world first class, staying in five-star hotels. And yet, you know, two occasions there where it was very easy to have had a pot shot at him. So, you know, and they won't discuss the cost of security. The daughters were at huge expense given security when there was no known risk to their lives. And this is just...
And no one cares about them. Like, we couldn't care less about Sarah and Andrew's children. Then, like, they could literally walk down the street and people would just leave them because we don't like them, we're not bothered, and we don't want to pay for them.
Well, you know, he did. It was part of the status, and he did insist for many years that they did have protection. They don't now, as part of that status. It's clear his big plan now is to push them forward as working royals. I think that's unlikely given the scandals around the parents, and also, to be honest, the possible skeletons in the closet about the daughters. As we've seen, you know, Beatrice promoting a Saudi bank the other day. They were very active at Pitch the Palace. They picked up lots of contacts going with him on these taxpayer-funded special representative trips. So I think people don't really trust the daughters. You know, there are various stories I have in the book of Andrew trying, for example, to get a free place at a business school for one of the daughters in exchange for being a patron. There's stories trying to get the English National Ballet to take on a particular auction system from the particular company that one of the daughters worked for. you know, just shameless sort of trying to sell themselves, basically, and do business, you know, like an Arab souk.
And, well, yeah, I mean, they have a lot of contacts in the Middle East, so they, you know, they're taught very well. But when Andrew did his interview with the BBC, it was originally going to be to talk about pitch to palace, is that right? You know, that point.
Yes, it was, absolutely.
But he was, that was, you found, he was taking, was it 2%?
Yes, Pitch to the Palace was a charity to basically bring entrepreneurs and investors together. And it did a lot of good work, particularly abroad. It was franchised out. But it was all done at Buckingham Palace and James's Palace. The Queen would attend. The Grenadier Guards played. I think the shock for people was to discover that Andrew had set up a separate company called Pitch at Palace Global. And in the small print of all the contracts was that he personally would take a 2% share of all the money invested in these projects, which is kind of verboten and was sneaky. It was all hidden. And in fact, for many years, you know, this money was being transferred from Pitch at Palace Global to his bank accounts. And the alleged Chinese spy, Tenbo, was part of this Pitch at the Palace in China. So, you know, again, the full story of Pitch at the Palace has never really come out. This was meant to, when he got sacked from being special representative, this was just another Pete way of feathering his nest in a slightly different way. So I think there's a real need for a parliamentary inquiry into his time as special representative and his activities at, like Pitch at the Palace. And frankly, how Sarah Ferguson has monetized her royal position over a period of 35 years, you know, with a Duchess collection of biscuits and, every possible thing.
It was
thing
the food blender that did it for me, wasn't it?
The food blender, exactly. And recommending diets that actually were shown not to work. You know, she's absolutely shameless in the way she'll promote products, many of which are complete jokes. I mean, cameras, cranberry juice, the number of, I mean, she's written all these books, which of course are ghosted or plagiarized. You know, she's a real grifter.
She really is. And I think it's like, you know, they're the grifty adults, and then you've got the little gremlin grifty children, you know, and they're not children, actually. They're women of nearly 40. They are not children. Do you think Sarah is in touch with Ghislaine Maxwell?
No, I suspect she's not. I don't think the two of them liked each other much. I mean, though Ghislaine says that Sarah Ferguson introduced Andrew to Epstein. You know, they're very different people. I mean, Ghislaine, in that recent interview, which she did in prison, partly to get herself put into a cushier number, you know, was pretty disparaging about Fergie. Said, felt that Fergie had the hots for Epstein, which Fergie does seem to have. She has these sort of weird passions for people who are rich and powerful. And so that doesn't surprise me. No, I don't think there's any love lost there. I think there were concerns at one point. I mean, Sarah certainly was briefing to the press against Ghislaine, trying to keep Andrew out of her ambit. I think that's very unlikely. I mean, Ghislaine certainly knows where all the bodies are buried, and they must be worried that she doesn't speak a bit more. I'm told that Ghislaine promised them, so that, but actually you're right, there must be some contact, because she did promise them that she wasn't going to spill the beans. And that comes from a source I was talking to only two nights ago, who's very close to Sarah.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, everything that the public see, you know, is performative from Sarah and Andrew, because they will all still be, I still think they'll be colluding, you know. They would be worried that Ghislaine may speak, and there will be, you know, yes, they might not be on the phone directly to each other, but there will be intermediaries that are passing messages and making sure that their dirty little secrets stay out of the public domain. And that's why, you know, everyone, if you know someone that has intel, get it to Andrew, because this paperback, I think, will be explosive. You know, you had 20 pages legaled out, didn't you, of the book?
Yes, Well, thank you. Yes, we had a lot of pages taken out, a lot of stuff that actually has proved to be true. So, for example, I had a lot of stuff on Mandelson. But, you know, I would be very grateful if people got in touch with stories, because that's how one builds the pressure, the picture. It has to be this oral testimony, because all the documents have sort of been destroyed. They've been hoovering them up to try and cover their traces. You know, it's very interesting that you know, clearly only it so far, certain names have begun to emerge with these email leaks. But I understand, you know, there will be clearly more names leaked, and there will be more material about Andrew and Sarah. This is only the beginning of what's going to come out.
Do you think there's a lot worse to come out? I mean, it's yes. Hard to fathom what could be worse.
Yes, I think there's a lot. And I've picked up all sorts of stories which I can't stand up legally, quite separately from the Epstein disclosures, which are absolute dynamite, to do with, for example, with drugs, to do with, in effect, prostitution. But very difficult to source those on the record and back them up. So whether we'll be able to use them, I just don't know.
You said that Rebecca Brooks, the head of News UK, has, it's reported, naked images of Fergie in her safe that was in the News of the World, or whether it's in her safe now, but, you know, it was in the News of the World safe.
Yes, I mean, pictures, I understand, were taken of Fergie in the bath smoking. And those pictures, you know, were, I think they tried to scoop them up. There was an attempt, I think, at one point to try and sell them. And one or two pictures have emerged in the foreign press. But I understand from a journalist working at the News of the World that they had this stuff in the safe, and it's been taken away by Rebecca Brooks. Now, where it's gone, whether it's in a private safe of hers, whether it's been destroyed, she's very good friends with Fergie, or whether it's been passed somewhere else in one of the News Corp offices, I just don't know.
So we just need to wait for the next few years and see Rebecca Brooks get a king's honour, and then we go, oh, yeah, you'll stay quiet. Do you think that they use the kind of king and queen's honours to put little, you know, little bits of protection around everywhere? Because
I don't think they do it themselves, but it's sort of people, it's almost self, people do it themselves. So I know a case wearing my publishing hat, where a publisher has refused to do a book on royal finances because of what he calls sensitivities. And the sensitivities are that he wants a K, and he's not going to get it if he does that. I think it is extraordinary that they do have this power of patronage. I mean, there should be independent committees, there should be everything should be done on the basis of people's achievement. And in some ways, I now feel that it's the lowest orders, it's the MBEs, which are the really valuable ones, because they're based on people's achievement and contribution to society. And the ones at the top are basically people who've either paid for them or, you know, sucked up to the royals. I mean, I think of Sir David Beckham and others. You know, again, I mean, they've used each other. The Beckhams is a good example. I mean, Beckham clearly has a following. The royals have used that for their own uses. But, you know, there were the Beckhams having private birthday parties for their children in Buckingham Palace, hosted by Fergie and Andrew. But some very, you know, but everything is scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. But, you know, I just find it pathetic that people have such an inferiority complex that these things are important to them.
What I think is funny is, obviously, you know, Victoria Beckham, you only ever see what Victoria Beckham wants you to see. And I admire her, because I think, you know, she's a very shrewd businesswoman, and the way she's handled her image, I do have a lot of respect for her. And so you just know that it was Fergie that leaked the picture of Harper Beckham. And you just think, is there nothing? You know, everything, like you say, is transactional, and there's a price.
Well, everyone. I think, to be fair, I think the picture was leaked on their Instagram account. It was on their Instagram, the Beckham's Instagram account, and that's and they were showing off.
Are you sure? Because it was not a great picture. So it was, because the Beckhams don't normally especially with, you know, the children's friends and everything, it's very un-Beckham to do that. I'll look into it though, because it kind of just screams leak. But Fergie is renowned for leaking, isn't she?
Yes, yes. And she has good relations with members of the press because she's a very useful source for them. So absolutely, we do see that.
Who did you find her kind of speed dial was? You know, which journalist?
Well, she's very close to Arthur Edwards on the Sun, for example. So the Sun haven't covered this book. When the book first came out and all the papers were covering it, the only piece the Sun ran was a sort of big puff piece on Fergie by Arthur Edwards. No reason for that. The Independent haven't done much. Geordie Gregg, who's the editor, his sister is a lady in waiting to one of the members of the royal family. So, and he's done rather pro interviews with Prince Andrew. So, you know, there is a network, and every, you know, you've got to sort of understand what that network is. Clearly, Vanity Fair and Tatler ran interviews with me, but actually, in the end, didn't publish them. That was true also in the States. The word went out. I picked up from journalists that they shouldn't touch the book. And that, you know, there could be penalties for doing so. So, you know, a PR firm was employed to address the book. So, yeah.
Because they engaged a billionaire to...
Well, I understand. I mean, the Denaro billionaire was paid for a PR firm to shall we say, address the book. But, you know, it's not worked. There's been a lot of coverage. We've had some good reviews.
Smash the like button, guys. Let's do what the billionaire can't control. Let's send the hypes and everything, and make sure you order this book. I just think it's disgusting, Andrew.
Lots of one-star ratings, not reviews on Amazon, which I've never had before. So again, you know, if people can sort of fight back, and it is happening. I mean, I'm getting, you know, the balance is changing. And now I think there's a much smaller percentage of one-star reviews as more and more people read the book and like the book. And actually, they're the ones who write the reviews. There are very few one-star reviews. It tends to be ratings. So, yeah, no, people power, absolutely. And I think if people feel as strongly as we do that, you know, there is something rotten in the state of Denmark, and that, you know, there is a need to speak truth to power and not let the rich and powerful get away with things, then this is our opportunity and our moment to see, you know, a better Britain, because, you know, there is, I'm afraid, some terrible things going on and being covered up, and people knowing that they're protected. So, for example, none of the files on Andrew's time as a special representative have been released. I know the computer in the Department of Trade, all references to him have been removed. Ambassadors were told not to talk to me. You know, every attempt has been made to try and shall we say, lower, suppress this story. I'm not the first journalist or writer to have this experience. I mean, they do it repeatedly. But I think we've reached a point where people are less prepared to accept that, because, as you say, we have these other triggers or levers, you know, like social media, like podcasts like yours, which present a different view, Sean Atwood. And we don't need to rely on the mainstream press who often turn a blind eye to these stories.
And I think as well, as members of the public, you know, we can't get justice. Like, we are not a legal representative. We weren't in court with Virginia. But we can all use our voice to fight for these women who were treated and in the most despicable manner that we can't even say the words on YouTube, you know. And this is a member of, I don't care what he says, you know, I no recollection. You don't pay millions of pounds to someone, you know. We all know what he did.
We have email testimony with him discussing Virginia Giuffre with Ghislaine. There's material there about him being recruiting or being involved with Ghislaine and Epstein and bringing in a PR firm to deal and undermine her and others. I mean, a lot of these victims were paid off. A lot of them were intimidated and refused to give evidence. A lot of them pleaded the fifth when they were in the hearings. So a lot of pressure was put on people. And of course, you've got to remember, a lot of these people who were highly traumatized eventually committed suicide or were driven to suicide. You know, Andrew ordered Virginia Giuffre off a catalogue, in effect. You know, there were these books of photographs passed around these men, and they could choose the girls they wanted. You know, it wasn't chance that she just happened to be in London, and you know, they happened to go out to tramp. You know, he selected her like you might pick a takeaway. And this is a girl of 17. You know, it is pretty extraordinary, some of this stuff.
When you think as well what Virginia and so many other girls went through, you know, your brain does not stop developing until you're 25 years old. Virginia was the other side of the world with no one looking after her, being exploited in the worst possible ways. And then when she gets, you know, the courage to speak out, and that's not to say that people that have been through what she has don't have courage, but, you know, she was so pivotal in what we know now. And to be gaslit and to be undermined and to have this narrative put out by, you know, Andrew's side that she's inconsistent and, you know, trauma is not linear.
Yes, no, exactly. Well, I mean, I think people like Victoria Harvey, you know, I don't know if anyone takes her seriously, but, you know, this is pretty nasty ways to behave, a way to behave. And I mean, complete joke figures now, actually, because, I mean, everything has been proved. The photo has been proved, the timings of when Andrew met Virginia Giuffre. There's plenty of eyewitness testimony of Andrew with Giuffre at Tramp on the island and elsewhere. So, I mean, you know, the sort of pedal of lies they produced, I mean, are just ridiculous.
Did Bill Clinton come up in your research? And, you know, because there's a lot of names like Bill Gates and Bill Clinton, and yet again, these one percenters seem to evade justice.
Yes, and yes, he did come up. I mean, and Amy Robach talks about it, and when she does her the mic when she's filmed, but doesn't realize she's been filmed. Other people have talked about Bill Clinton. So we have I think there are a few references, but that Bill Clinton was one of the figures that I'm afraid the lawyers looked at very carefully, and a lot of that material was removed, as a material on Tony Blair was removed as well.
Oh, will we ever know the Tony Blair information?
Well, I hope eventually somehow this material can get out. I mean, it's often just a matter of finding fresh evidence to support material. But, you know, clearly he and Clinton are very rich and very litigious. So one has to be careful about the associations one makes. But I don't think there's any, you know, I think there has been stuff in the public domain linking them to Epstein. So I'm not speaking out of turn here.
I wonder, do any of these people share a legal firm with Epstein and who Epstein used? I'd be interested to know.
Well, I mean, Schilling seems to act, it's either Carter Ruck or Schilling who seems to act for a lot of these people. I mean, they do specialise in, shall we say, some of the more controversial figures. So I just don't know. But they're certainly, you know, two firms that seem to write very aggressive letters to publishers, authors, journalists who are trying to change the narrative. And have got a reputation for doing that.
And some of these legal firms have recently launched PR wings to their offerings as well. So, you know, that's very chilling.
Well, reputation management, is always been part of some of these firms. I think Schilling certainly. So that doesn't surprise me.
With Virginia, you know, obviously she's no longer alive. With it being YouTube, we have to say unalived. Do you have any intel about how Andrew and Sarah took that news and a kind of any comments since Virginia's passing?
No, I don't. I mean, I can imagine they were relieved because clearly this was another testimony, but it could have been fresh testimony. But in some ways, she's got the last laugh because she's got her posthumous memoir, which I think will have new information. And so they probably breathed a sigh of relief and have now found that actually they're not out of the woods yet.
Do you, is it being released with a major publisher or?
Yes, it's been published by Knopf, who are one of the major publishers with Random House in the States. I don't know who's doing it here. That may not be published here, I suspect, possibly for legal reasons. The libel laws and others are slightly more generous in the States. But of course, anything that's published in the States will be reported here. So even without a British publication, I think they must be worried what may still emerge.
And where are the other survivors and victims from Andrew? Do you believe that Andrew and Fergie have kind of quietly paid them off behind the scenes? Because we know it wasn't just Virginia.
Well, I think Epstein paid off a lot of people. I think he intimidated a lot of people. There are a lot of NDAs. There are a lot of women who are now middle-aged with children who don't want to go through all the publicity. There are a lot of very traumatized victims who don't want to face up to it again, have kind of got on with their lives. So there are lots of reasons for people not to speak. I'm not sure that Andrew and Sarah have done that, but I think they're certainly... I think with other rich and powerful people in this story, they may well have put pressure on some of these victims not to speak. It is interesting that only certain names so far have emerged when we know that there are other names. There's the case of Sarah Ransom, who's made accusations against Richard Branson. He's denied them. But questions have been raised there. Questions have been raised about Alan Dershowitz, even though Virginia Giuffre withdrew her case there. And I just don't know the truth of some of those stories, but there are lots and lots of rumours running around.
I want to go to the chat, guys, and say, sorry, I've got bloody fly flying around my office. It's driving me nuts. Sorry, anyone that's got questions, drop them in the chat, and I'd love to kind of like finish with some of these questions. There's a question from ES Classic Soul. Is there a statute of limitations on human transportation in SA?
No, I don't think there is. I think if the information only came to light subsequently and was covered up, then the statute would run from the time that people were made aware of the particular offence. So, maybe a lawyer will correct me there, but I think there are cases. I know there's a case with Lisa Brinkworth and Jean-Luc Brunel and others, which has been allowed, I think will proceed, where she only learnt certain things that had happened, the cover-up about what happened to her. And I think she's being able to pursue a case. So, no, and I don't think there should be. I mean, we have restitution going back to the Second World War, and I think and those are for goods as opposed to people. So I think there should certainly, the law should be able to give justice to these people now that people are more aware of exactly what happened.
Sorry. Mind Hack said, did you catch that fly? That's impressive. I think I did catch the fly. Sorry, it's been driving me mad. So Awesome Brick says, why is the supply of the monarchy not put out to competitive tender?
Sorry, the supply of the monarchy, what the direct succession should kind of be put out there. I do think that we do expect too much of the monarchy. We do need a slimmed down monarchy. I think that would avoid some of the embarrassments of people like Andrew and Fergie. And I think there is a case for actually people in the community doing some of the work that they do. Some of that work's done by Lord Lieutenants and the Deputy Lieutenants. But I think there is a case for people in the communities who are seen as heroes to be doing the sort of work the royal family does. I think in some ways people may be as happy to see them as they are to see some of the minor royals.
I wonder if your investigations have made you look at Diana's tragic death and raise questions about, because obviously you have found so much corruption from financial, criminal, SA, the list is endless. Does that make you have a lot more questions about things that have happened and going back and
yes,
going?
Of course. Yeah, of course, one does reevaluate certain things that one just took for granted, just assumed and didn't have a sort of conspiracy theory, thought it was conspiracy theory. I mean, Tom Sykes has looked recently at Diana's death and says there are a lot of anomalies there which are unexplained. They created a lot of very successful books. I did an interview for a podcast I used to do on the Scandalmongers with someone who'd written a book about Diana's death, challenging it and raising all the sort of strange unanswered questions. And certainly over the years, people have said to me, I mean, including people from the intelligence services, that she was killed. I would say the jury is still out, but I think, you know, there are odd things about that, which do raise some concerns. But you're right.
She foresaw it, didn't she? She said that, you know, this would happen. But then when you talk about, and obviously I'm not saying it, you know, it's MI5, but, you know, MI5, there's a lot of weird things you found as well, isn't there, from your research? And so these kind of intelligence agencies that we've almost been groomed to believe that they're keeping us safe and they're invisible, but they've got our back. Well, it doesn't seem like that.
Well, you know, I think one of the arguments is, you know, it's the line, who will rid me of this turbulent priest? And someone then comes and does it. So, I mean, Richard Thompson, who was a member of MI6, has said that, you know, one of the ways that they did get rid of people was in car accidents. And what happened to Diana is not an unusual scenario. I think there was a case where her brakes did fail and looked like they'd been tampered with. So, you know, there are reasons why she might have felt, I wouldn't say paranoid, she might have felt, you know, threatened. And maybe something will come forward. I mean, one of the you know, someone who does know information will one day tell the story, or a document will be found that relates the story. I think in some ways, hopefully, these stories are never lost. There's some little nugget that gives us an indication of what might have happened. But of course, you know, authorities are always trying to destroy evidence. And it's very hard to keep a secret when there are lots of people who are privy to it. So that's always my concern, that, you know, someone somewhere is going to break ranks. Something doesn't quite fit, you know. Her death, you know, there are arguments that clearly people were well briefed that she was coming to Paris. They put a plan into action. But, you know, a lot of things were rather last minute decisions. That, you know, is quite hard to anticipate when you're planning an operation like that.
The Tom Sykes, because I interviewed him as well, I got a really strong gut feeling, and he didn't say this. This is just from my experience in media. But I thought the timing was interesting, and I feel like he's got a very direct link into Harry, and I feel like a lot of that was Harry speaking. That's just my opinion.
I think both Harry and William, I think, if I understand, do have their, you know, suspicions. And I mean, Tom is very well connected. That doesn't surprise me. I mean, he put his reputation on the line to do that piece. It was a very brave piece of journalism. But he, you know, I think what's so nice, good about Tom is he does go out on a limb on things. I mean, it's always very thoughtful. He makes a lot of very interesting connections. You know, he's someone I admire hugely, as someone who kind of thinks for himself and is independent.
Yeah, he's a brilliant writer, and the way he was speaking about, you know, bringing the article to life and his findings, I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
But it was very Harry as well to me, just reading with my kind of publicist hat on. Well, look, Andrew, I just wanted to say that I'm so grateful that you've given the time, but I'm also, everyone, can you smash the like, and can you follow Andrew on his X account? And if we have had over 1,000 people watching live, hopefully this will go up to many, many thousands. If you are all as sick and tired of elites weaponizing their power and money, trying to silence hardworking journalists like Andrew, can you leave a 5-star review on Amazon? And the billionaire that Sarah and Andrew have allegedly paid, let's make it a complete waste of money. Maybe they haven't paid him. Maybe they've called in a favor. And if you haven't read his book or listened to the audio version, it is fantastic. And just thank you for moving ahead with this and taking a risk, because, you know, it is risky to do this, and you're ruffling feathers, and you've brought us more truth than, you know, we've had in a long time.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you for your support. And I hope we can continue this conversation as new material emerges.
To come back first when you've got the paperback, Andrew.
Absolutely. Of course, you will be first on the list.
Awesome. Well, thank you everyone for watching, and head over to my YouTube at Lauren the Insider. Follow, and I'll be doing some lives during the week. Andrew, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Right, I now need to end the stream. Sorry, I'm not that digitally savvy. Hang on. It's a bit like having a